Hi, this is Chris Jackson from Freedom Farm TV from in Franklin, Georgia, and you're listening to Cider Chat.
Episode 15. Toss a quarter high, sink it in a slot, heading south on Highway 95. Well, the ferry is burning, there's an island in view down in Georgia. Yeah, Georgia, oh, Georgia. Sun-blistered sand dunes are changing in the wind. Spanish moths cling to live oaks everywhere. If you choose, you could lose your soul down there. Talking about Georgia, yeah, Georgia, oh, Georgia. Well, hello, Ciderville. How's your tree shaking today? This is Aria Windcaller, your Cider MC at ciderchat.com. I hope you like my little ditty that I wrote after I took a trip to Cumberland Island in Georgia. Cumberland is off the coast and is considered a barrier island. And I had the pleasure of taking a one-week backpacking course there. You have to take a ferry over to Cumberland Island, and it is regulated, you know, with rangers and whatnot. And this is a place where John F. Kennedy Jr. married his wife, Carolyn Bessett. And they had that private wedding on this kind of isolated, unknown national park, I believe, in a little chapel on the island. It is magical. Thus, the line in my song. If you choose, you could lose your soul down there. Truly, in all the best ways imaginable. Yes, we are chatting with a chap from Georgia in just a wee bit. His name is Chris Jackson from Freedom Farm TV. And I will tell you a bit about that chat in a moment. Meanwhile, Cider Chat is accepting sponsorship offerings that fit with the good people of Ciderville. If your business would like to see a Cider Chat's media kit, send an email to Ria, R-I-A, at ciderchat.com. And I'll send that media kit right off to you. Big ol' thank you to a few folks who recently donated to Cider Chat. You are awesome, and I'll be raising a glass in your honor at CiderCon next week. Speaking of CiderCon, let's just go through the schedule, and it's an overview right now, but I think this will help any one of us who are attending CiderCon, which is being held in Portland, Oregon. It's being put on by the United States Cider Maker Association. So this is like their yearly event where they bring in folks and they discuss what's going on for the year. They have a voting session. And whether or not you're going, I think it's informative to see what the schedule is and what topics they are putting out there. And just to maneuver this, if you're online later today or while you're listening to this podcast, just go to the website ciderconference.com, then just press the on the top menu schedule. And then as you kind of scroll down the page, you want to go to interactive event listing. And once you hit the interactive event listing, it'll come up with a search box and where you're supposed to put the name of the person in, but you might not know that name, like I didn't know anybody. So instead, just press the button that says search, and then you'll get this full PDF file that you could even print. And that's kind of a new option. It wasn't really happening before like that. So the actual workshops begin on February 3rd. That's a Wednesday. So the conference is truly like a Wednesday through Friday. So it's a three-day event. On Tuesday, the day before, people are going to be taking tours around Oregon to the different cider makers and cider-related bars. But on Wednesday, they begin with Advanced Cider Orchard Production Workshop, which I think that's really interesting. And that's also interesting for our chat today with Chris Jackson from Freedom Farm TV in Georgia, because we're going to be talking about grafting and getting more into that piece of cider making on how to grow apples. There's also going to be a TTB compliance training workshop. That's for folks who have to deal with the laws and regulations. And then there's going to be the annual business meeting. There'll be a sensory evaluation. I'm not really sure what that means. And then in the afternoon, it's going to start getting interesting with Bill Bradshaw. And it's going to be about, he'll be presenting a UK cider presentation. And I will be chatting with Bill Bradshaw at CiderCon. Really looking forward for that for an upcoming cider chat. Then first-time attendee orientations, and I imagine this is going to be where folks start having some cider and a welcome reception. Now, getting on to the next day, on Thursday, a number of different things. There's going to be a trade show where people are selling their wares, vendors who really support the cider makers. There's going to be Perry with Tom Oliver. I will also be speaking with Tom Oliver, who, if you don't know his ciders, he is a UK cider maker. Very, very delicious. Really excited to be speaking with him. More TTB federal law stuff. But some of the key things that really got my attention was understanding yeast with the Yeast Whisperer. That's Shea Comfort from Scott Labs. So that's a key thing of cider is yeast. And then there's the trade show, also how we grow cider apples in the UK. It's not just about the actual process of cider making, but the apples themselves. And I'm scheduled to meet in just a couple of days, John Bunker from Maine, and we're going to be talking about his specialty, which is apple identification and his history there. So stay tuned for that cider chat. Some of the other workshops are basic production planning for cider, cooking with and for cider, sanitation in the cidery, setting up for success, business planning, lessons from selling fine wine and craft beer, rapid expansion, things to consider. You know, that's an interesting topic, rapid expansion. That happens a lot. I've seen it over the years when, you know, I'm writing about beer. I'm a craft beer writer. And I'll go in and talk to the brewer, the local brewer, and he or she will say, I can't make enough beer. And they'll have a real, like, anxious look on their face. And it is a problem, albeit a good problem to have, but it is a problem. And to know how to manage that and have some kind of plan before you're kind of caught there is a good consideration. So that's a probably worthwhile to attend. A lot of these are happening at the same time, so you're going to have to pick and choose. All about hops and carbonation fundamentals, charcuterie explained. Charcuterie is like sausages and meats. If you listen to episode 3 in Cider Chat, Wouter Bliss from Cider in Rotterdam, Netherlands, he has a charcuterie operation right across from his cider shop. Engaging your core audience through writing, the legal year in review, pasteurization techniques. So that's a good topic for anyone into actually pressing their own juice. An introduction to cider orchard design and establishment. Building a cider business in Devon. That's over again, they're taking a UK model. Topics on canning cider. Mixology. And that's just on the Thursday. Those are all the workshops that are available on Thursday. So a lot going on there. Let me go to the next page here. If you hear that shuffling in the background, I'll just go to some ones that are just popping out here. Cider facility planning, growing apples for cider in the U.S., introduction to draft dispensing for cider or draft 101, tools for self-distribution success. Distributing cider is a big factor that plays in to the next stage of, okay, I'm making excellent cider. I got everything going. My cidery's up and rolling. Now, how am I going to get this out to the masses? And there's different feelings on distributors. Many people starting off self-distribute, or oftentimes you get involved with a distributor, you might not be able to get out. So that's a really good workshop to get into, I imagine. Okay, let's see, social media for cideries. I think that's going to be worthwhile because certainly you could have the best cider in the world, but if you don't know how to let people know or brand that or work with folks like myself, a podcast or Twitter or Facebook, it's a key piece. So that's just the way the market rolls nowadays. Going wild, that sounds really fun. I imagine that's like going wild with wild yeast. Obtaining and structuring investments in your cidery. So that's your business plan. Starting a small lab in a cidery. Tips and tools for cider clarification. Pretty cool stuff. Cheese pairing with ciders. And the first impressions, the importance of packaging, branding, marketing. Lots more that I'm not mentioning, but really good stuff. Here's another one. Cider apple breedings and genetics. Hydrogen sulfide production by yeast. Tricks of trademark and copyright. And English cider tastings and traditions and tasting. So that's just, wow, isn't that a bevy of stuff that's going to be happening on Thursday and Friday? And that kind of ends the session. There's going to be events at night at Cider Riot, at Bushwhacker, at Reverend Nuts, everywhere. I'm sure there's going to be more coming up as the week progresses. So it's a pretty exciting time. On Saturday, there's going to be a level one cider certification course, which I am attending. Super thrilled to be doing that. That's going to be led by Eric West, and you'll know him as the Cider Guide. So we'll see. This is the beginning that the U.S. Cider Maker Association is starting a cider certification. There's other cider certification courses. So let's really wish them all the best to really get that off the ground. And again, I will be in attendance. I'm just rubbing my hands in delight back and forth. Can you hear that? I can't wait. I'm sure it's going to be some amazing cider, and really excited to be able to bring to Ciderville some chats with UK cider makers in that perspective too. We'll also be going on subsequent podcasts talking to folks in Spain and talking about Sidra, and lots of good stuff. And of course, I will be present at the whole CiderCon event, talking to lots of cider makers and cider enthusiasts, people in the trade. So don't be afraid to just come on up and say hi. I'd like to chat with you about what I'm doing at my cidery, or what you're doing with a cider behind the scenes. I love that. Don't be afraid. You'll notice me. I'll have a Cider Chat logo. I'll be wearing that. And you might see somebody walking around with podcast or podcaster on her shirt. That is me. So say, hey, Rhea, what's up? Let's go have a cider. You know, I'll be running in front of you. Seriously, because I know some of us are serious about cider and what we're bringing to the table, I really don't want you to be shy just because it's media. And one thing I really want to say loud and clear to anyone, whoever reaches out to Cider Chat, is that our goal, my goal, is your goal, is that we are pushing the cider agenda forward for everyone. And I never want to put a photo of you that doesn't make you look absolutely stunning on social media, or have you say words that wouldn't make you shine in your best light. That's a waste of time. So there it is. You know a little bit about where we are going. Okay, so we want to head down to Georgia and talk to Chris Jackson of Freedom Farm TV. And I didn't really ask him what the TV is about, but I do think it's because he has a YouTube channel. And this man is a blogger and has a pretty interesting background. You hear a little bit about that. And he and I are talking a lot about grafting and permaculture and a little bit about cider making that he does at home. So there's a lot of information that will be left on the show notes, any kind of links or books that he's talking about. You could go to the show notes and find those links there. So don't worry about writing it down now. Just go to episode 15 at ciderchat.com. I am feeling parched, so I think it is time to head down to Georgia. Let's all grab a glass and join this chat.
I don't know this snow thing you speak of. In Georgia, we don't get very much snow.
Yeah, well, that's the way the world is supposed to work. I'm pretty curious, Chris, about what you're doing at Freedom Farm.
Well, Freedom Farm TV is my blog, which is freedomfarmtv.com, and my YouTube channel. Well, it's a journey, my family's journey to self-sufficiency and work to obtain more self-sufficiency in our lives.
How's that going for you? You've been doing this for a couple of years now, right?
Pretty much about 3 years now. So far, we've allowed my wife to leave the corporate world, and she kind of holds down the fort while I still have my full-time job. I tell people I'm a computer geek during the day and cider making, homesteading, permaculturist at night, superhero at night.
Love it. Love it. Well, let's get right into some of that cider making. I want to start there, and then let's talk about the permaculture. Now, cider making in Georgia, can you grow apple trees in Georgia?
Well, I'm trying, and we have enough chill hours to grow trees here in Georgia. I think I'm zoned about 7B. There are orchards around me. It's a little hot, but yes, we can grow apple trees here in Georgia.
And what kind of trees or what kind of apple varieties are you making your cider with? You're a non-commercial cider maker, but what are you using for the apple varieties?
There's an orchard near where I can get their juice. You know, it's pasteurized, and you know, I just basically obtain the juice and ferment it at home. Mm-hmm. So like I said, other than that, I'm really new to the cider world, and more I learn about the history of it, I'm really digging it.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, that's all about, you know, starting this country, the U.S. and it sounds like you're into, I don't know, are you into that show Preppers? Is that what you're doing? Like when you're talking about sustainability, kind of really getting your homestead all totally self-reliant?
Yes and no. Some of that is off the deep end. You know, I'm not preparing for, like, you know, the end of the world. But I like to be prepared for in case, you know, I lose my job. Make sure you're debt free. Your little emergency kit for, you know, 3 days, but. You know, some of that prepper shows are out there.
Yeah.
But I like really digging, you know, doing stuff for myself, you know, more like the independence of and having the skills to do stuff for yourself instead of, you know, every time you need something, you go to Walmart or wherever to the grocery store.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly I would call that country sensibility.
It's what our grandparents did, you know. Mm-hmm. I once had, like I said, when I was in college, I had a history project where I had to interview someone about the Depression. And I interviewed my grandmother who grew up in the South here in Georgia during the Depression. She said she really didn't know anything different. We had everything we needed that we always had. So that really resonated with me.
Mm-hmm. Nice, nice. Now, you're making cider. Where are you getting your yeast? Are you doing that mail order? Or are there homebrew shops that you're able to get cider yeast?
Yes, there is a homebrew shop in the where I live. I live kind of in the country, but I say we're 30 minutes from everywhere. So basically in the town right south of me, there is a homebrew shop. I get whatever supplies that I need from them.
Mm-hmm. Now, typically when folks think of the South, they're thinking they could probably get some good moonshine. And that, you know, that's the first thing that comes to thought. But how many folks locally that you know in your area are drinking cider or are now making cider?
All I know of is me. Most of my friends, they're real big brewers, but they brew beer. So mm-hmm. The cider thing is like I said, is new to me. When I think about cider until, you know, here recently, I thought about, you know, more like of a wine cooler. But I've you know, recently been educated and like we say in the South, bless my wife's heart, all she hears is cider, cider, cider now.
That's awesome. Well, Chris Jackson, you are now representing Georgia and all the cider makers. The pressure is
on. Thank you.
All right.
Hopefully, I just want to master the craft.
Yes, don't we all?
Yes.
Some things like cider making is kind of like a lifelong pursuit. Can one become truly a master? I'm not so sure because the apple could be very elusive, but we do try our best. Well, one of the things I really want to talk to you about is a permaculture and about grafting trees. So why don't we first just begin with giving folks, you know, we hear that word permaculture, but how about if you give us a little bit of a definition of that?
Well, a permaculture was developed, or the term permaculture was coined in the 1970s by two Australians named Bill Mullison and his assistant, Dave Holgren. And it's basically a mash of words, permanent agriculture. And it's a design science where you try to develop systems that mimic nature in your production. And it's based off of three ethics: earth care, people care, and return of surplus. And all that, and the main tenet is to take care of yourself and that of your children. And that's the main goal of permaculture, which, you know, is the definition of self-sufficiency. It's really digging it.
Mm-hmm. Right on. At Freedom Farm TV, you're documenting this. And one of the things that caught my eye, besides you sharing some of your photos of your cider, is on the grafting. And I thought that this was very timely because here we are, you know, at the end of January, moving into February. And what is so important to good cider making is having good quality apples. And one of the ways that I know of is to graft onto an existing tree some key cider varieties. I had a tree that had five different varieties on it. So how about if we talk about that and maybe talk about some tips you might have, maybe begin actually first on grafting and what that is exactly.
Well, grafting is where you take a rootstock. There's several different varieties, like M111 or M11, and you take a known variety, say an Arkansas Black. You will make a cut on the scion, which is from the parent plant, like a like say the Arkansas Black, and the rootstock, and you whip graft is when they're both fairly young. And you kind of cut them at an angle and kind of match up the cambium layer. That's the green layer. And you will essentially turn that rootstock into a Arkansas Black. I don't know. I didn't know this before I got into it. But like if you have an apple, the seeds of an apple are not true to type, which means you like a Granny Smith. You can't take the seeds from a Granny Smith apple and plant a Granny Smith tree because the wonders of nature has it to where it takes a different cultivar to pollinate that Granny Smith apple. So they will not be true to type. If I borrow a thing from Forrest Gump with apple seeds, it's like a box of chocolates. If you plant them, you never know what you're going to get, with the exception of Antakova. Antakova will produce true-to-type apples, which is why I'm planning on, in the next couple of months, planting bukus of Antakova apples so I can propagate them and use them as my, you know, cider apples. Plus, if I need to, I can use them as a rootstock to graft, you know, whatever varieties I can get my hands on.
Mm-hmm. What can you tell us about that particular apple in terms of for
the
cider?
Antakova?
Yeah, why that one? Besides what you're saying, that you can plant it and it could be true to the seed.
As cider goes, that's what that's my next goal, is to see what kind of cider I can make out of an Antakova. See, I can get, you know, seedlings cheaper, but you always trade time for money, so I'm going to pay a little extra to get a tree that's farther along, buy some seedlings that are cheaper, I can buy more in bulk, and then propagate those. Mm-hmm. And but the Antokova is a Russian variety of apple, and I think it originates from the Ukraine. And for whatever reason, it'll produce a tree true to type, where other cultivars will not.
Chris, can you spell Antokova?
It is Antonovka. And I'm planning on buying my trees from newfarmsupply.com. Mm-hmm. He's a permaculturist. Also.
Well, I'll be really curious to see how that project goes as we kind of follow along with Freedom Farm TV on this project. I want to back up a little bit because you said a lot of things, and for folks who aren't really full-on farmers and they're coming from cider making as, you know, the fermenting aspect, but not the agricultural level, you talked about the rootstock. I think a lot of folks don't realize is that you can't, like you said, I think you said this very well, you can't plant the seed and grow that particular tree. And so when you get sapling, you know, and you kind of mail order that and it comes in, it has the rootstock, and then you could see that they have already grafted on the primary apple tree that you want to then grow. So when you're saying the rootstock, there's only a couple kinds of rootstocks. Can you repeat what those are again?
Can't remember all of them off the top of my head because there are lots of apple rootstock. But, you know, pears and other fruit trees, they're not quite as many. But, you know, when you get a dwarf tree, it'd be on a dwarf or semi-dwarf rootstock. I think M111 is a dwarf rootstock. And then there's other rootstocks that are, you know, this disease resistant or that disease resistant. And, you know, you really got to more research and what type of rootstock you might want to use for yourself, you know, wherever your climate is.
Right, exactly. And I think that's really important to note that there are zones. When I was first talking to you about Georgia, you know, I was thinking, geez, that's not typically the climate I would think for growing apples. I think, of course, peaches, which Georgia is so well known for. And so, you know, I was thinking, yeah, you know, I'm really curious about that, what you're doing. So you're going with the Antokova, and that you're going to be growing. But for the other folks who are thinking about starting with that rootstock, or let's say, for instance, I have a tree in my backyard, and I'm thinking about making my own cider, but it's your typical, you know, wild tree, and the fruit, it tastes like maybe it might have been a Macintosh, you know, kind of close to that. Left over, you know, from the folks who lived here before. They probably got it at some, like, little, you know, nursery. If I wanted to put some cider apples onto that tree, let's just go through that again, because you kind of explained it pretty well, but I just want to slow down the explanation. So I look at that tree and I say, you know, well, I'd like to try some Arkansas Black, because those are really nice cider apples. They have lots of tannins in it. What would I do? I'd probably first want to find an Arkansas Black tree that I can pull off the branch of, or how would I go about adding that next layer onto that main tree? Do I cut off a big chunk of the tree?
Yes, you can. With a cleft graft, that's a type of graft for, you know, more mature trees. And a good resource for your listeners is on YouTube, Dave Wilson Nursery. His channel is excellent. He's got a whole series on the backyard orchard, and he has a great videos on grafting, you know, the cleft graft. I think in his video he has a peach tree that he didn't like the fruit, so he just took different cultivars and cut a limb, and, you know, it was probably about 2 to 3 inches in diameter, and then you would peel back the cambium layer, and like on one limb, he grafted two different cultivars onto that limb just by taking the small scion and basically inserting it into the, for lack of a better term, the skin of the tree. And then you would, you know, wrap it with grafting bands, and he put some, the little sealant on it to protect, because, you know, one of the things you got to watch is make sure the graft and the scion and the doesn't dry out, because that, you know, of course would kill your scion. That is a great resource for, to learn more about grafting.
Okay, well, make sure to have a link to that YouTube channel. So that the cleft grafting is where they would go and just kind of, I know folks have done it right, you know, a couple feet up from the ground level, cut that entire tree off and put in actually a couple different varieties into that one main tree. And what I know, and I don't know a heck of a lot about this, but what I do know that I've heard is that that tree would probably be fruiting for about 15 years. That's about the life mm-hmm. of a grafted tree. And so that's a nice way for folks to get started who don't have an orchard currently of cider apples, and they want to start that process. And meanwhile, while that tree is growing, you could be planting your main trees of specific varieties that you want. Is that a little bit what you're doing, or is that a little bit different kind of process?
Well, what I want to do, you know, like I mentioned, seeds from an apple do not produce true to type, but that's mainly, you know, dessert apples. You know, like if you plant a Macintosh, like you said, it might come out a crab apple that's bitter and sweet. Well, you know, in cider making, that's what you're looking for. Mm-hmm. So what I plan on doing is planting every seed I can get my hands on and see what I can get, you know, and if it makes a great cider, that's, you know, bonus. Because on a small orchard, you know, I have 3 acres, you know, you can't really make it by just selling apples, and you want to sell a value added product. And what, you know, what better thing to make than cider? You know, that's mm-hmm. very valuable. And I think, and say that the tree that I planted from seed didn't make the apple I wanted, I can graft something I like onto it. It's a win-win. Mm-hmm. If you can propagate as much trees as you can, it's like having a printing press. You know, like retail, a tree is what, $20, $25 a piece? If you can propagate your own tree, that's money. Mm-hmm. You're growing money. Mm-hmm. So that's my plan. My plan is to try to, you know, take Anticovas, take them, and then also experiment. Try to find, plant as many seeds as I can and find what works for me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the beauty of all this is it's like an art form.
For you, you have 2 acres, but some folks don't even have that much room to grow trees. And it, like I said, they might have that little tree that's been sitting in the back of the yard, and they're wondering, you know, can I produce something there and just make a small amount for cider making? So with that grafting, when is that done? When would you graft and do that? I mean, you're going to be planting your apple trees here coming in Georgia. When would you be doing that for Georgia weather?
You can do it in March, while the tree is still dormant, because mm-hmm. you know, in Georgia, you got to make sure you water it really well. And once the tree starts leafing out, you really don't want to. Or you could in the fall, mm-hmm. where I want to really plant mine would be in the fall, so I don't have to worry as much about the heat and drought conditions, and it's easier to protect young trees in the fall. Mm-hmm.
And what about the grafting? When would the grafting take place when you want to add onto that existing tree?
I will do mine around April, no later than the beginning of May.
So and, is that pre-bud? Is that before you have buds on the tree?
Yes.
So that's a critical piece. Like when you're going to graft onto the apple tree, you want to make sure that it isn't budding out.
Yes.
Okay. So that would be something for folks to be thinking now, because we're going to be putting this out really, really soon, to start planning. What would be some of the, if you're going to make a checklist and somebody's scratching their head saying, dang, I want to buff up my apple tree in the backyard or do what Chris is doing down in Georgia, what would be like a little checklist for them to do? Some of the first things you would recommend? And you mentioned that there's a good YouTube. Is there a book, too, that you would refer folks to that's worked well for you?
The Hand Guide to Grafting, The Propagation of Woody Plants, The Complete Guide to the Propagation of Woody Plants. That's what it was. And that was, I mean, it goes through every species from trees to shrubs, ornamentals to fruit. So it's a very comprehensive, but it kind of reads like a college textbook. So really can't read it from front to back, but you can read it from, like a reference manual, just, like if you want a Bartlett pear and you can just turn to Bartlett pear and it'll give you recommendations. Mm-hmm. And that book is really nice because from where I live, it was written by a guy from the University of Georgia. So it kind of it hits home for me.
That's nice. So, again, getting back to those tips. So I'm thinking about doing my apple tree or my pear tree. Maybe get myself a book and then order that wood scion. And that's like a clipping of a particular variety that I want.
Mm-hmm. And like I said, Dave Wilson Nursery's YouTube channel is a great resource. I think I've looked at every video in his series multiple times. Just don't be afraid. Just do it. Mm-hmm. Just find, research what you want. And, it may not work. I mean, Arkansas Black may not work in Georgia until you get in and look and research. And don't be afraid to fail, because in growing trees, you will fail every now and then, but you just got to keep going and do not give up. Like I said, don't be afraid to experiment.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I think that's the way of the cider maker. We are fearless and we just kind of go into it no matter what. And typically out of that, beautiful things happen.
Have fun with it.
Chris and I still have a bit more to talk about grafting and cider making, but I expect you're thinking, dang, you just can't grow an apple tree out of a book. I get so much info from the Cider Chat podcast, and I can't wait for more informative chats with cider makers and orchardists and more. Not only am I going to tell my friends who love cider about this podcast, but I'd like to share my support and show my support to Rhea by donating today via the Cider Chat website. Now let's get back to Chris Jackson of Freedom Farm TV in Franklin, Georgia. I mean, what's the smallest size that you could graft on? If I was walking in the woods, because a lot of people are doing like lost tree type of projects where they're going and say, they find that tree and then they take a clipping. But what's the size clipping that you want to do if you're, and when you clip it, do you wrap it in like a paper towel, like a wet paper towel, like I would with flowers from a grocery store? How do I preserve that wood scion? And that's what it's called, like the clipping from the other tree, so I could bring it to my main tree.
Yes, just wrap it in paper towel and keep it moist. And it'll be, about the size of a pinky or maybe bigger. That's a good for a whip graft. You can graft that onto a sapling or yearling. That's a good place to start. And I like to pot, start mine in pots. Like I say, I've on Twitter, you've seen my cider making setup that I made myself. Mm-hmm. So I like to do things kind of like on the cheap. I noticed where they were put near where I live, they were building a new school and they were putting in the landscaping. I asked for the pots. I got stacks of free 1 gallon to 3 gallon pots, and they're, you know, free to experiment with. I can try anything I want. Just try to be creative and inventive, mm-hmm. and, you know, everything will turn out great.
Yes, that is a good way to go. One more thing about that grafting. The actual cut, we talked about the cleft grafting, but if I was going to do a smaller size, like the pinky size, a twig from a tree that I found out in the woods and I wanted to bring back to my home orchard, when I graft it, it's typically on a slant so that it's almost like a joint. Mm-hmm. The two are going together, right? It's not like have a stubby and then kind of pop it together. It has to be kind of flat against flat in a way, right?
Yeah, their cambium's got to line up, and it's called a whip graft. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you cut it at similar angles, like mirror images of each other, so they'll fit together, kind of like a puzzle piece. And then you'll take a grafting band and just wrap that area and let it heal. Like you mentioned earlier, when you buy a trees from like a nursery, you'll notice that the graft part and kind of like a scar, and you just got to let it heal. Mm. So you keep it protected and wrap it with that grafting band. And I've also used electrical tape, mm-hmm. and just, you know, wrap it maybe an inch above, all the way up from an inch above the graft to an inch below the graft. Mm. And then you just got to let it heal. And that's the thing about it. If I'm a bit of a not very patient person, so I like to make sure, you know, that's the hard part for me. It's the waiting to make sure if it's the graft took or not.
When should you not be peeking? Like the first 3 months or when?
Yeah, I wait a year.
Okay,
you'll know it's when the scion starts leafing out. Mm. That's when you really know the graft is took, because, mm-hmm. you know, while it's dormant, it looks dead. Mm-hmm. But in the following year, when it starts, you know, flowering and leafing out, that's when you really know it's good to go.
I like that idea, the electrical tape. I mean, aesthetically, I'm not so into it. And I know that there's specific grafting wraps that you could use. But I tell you, when I'm traveling for business, it's the one thing I always have in my briefcase is electrical tape. It's like the perfect, mm-hmm. like, go-to for emergencies. So using it for grafting, why not?
Well, yeah. Yeah, just go for it. And remember, I have a Greek proverb that is great for this situation. It says, a society grows great when old men plant trees whose shade they shall never sit in. And, you know, that just the essence of what we all want to accomplish here. I will go to my grave making trees and making cider.
Nice. Getting back to the cider, you're making some peach cider. Right, yeah, adding some peaches,
yes,
to your cider. How'd that go for you?
Well, it's bottled. It tasted fine. I just got to let it age now, I think, maybe at least a month before I want to try it again. But while bottling, I had a taste of it, and it tasted very good. I was impressed.
How many peaches did you use, like, per, like, a 5 gallon carboy?
I'm still only doing it on a smaller scale, so I made a 2 gallon batch.
Okay.
And I made a simple syrup out of them, you know, out of 4 peaches. And so, you know, I'm experimenting, so it turned out really good.
I have a peach cider right now, and I made it with peaches and some blueberries, and so dropping down that and making the clarity is a little bit more difficult when you put the fruit right directly in, but making a simple syrup is a nice way to go. A good idea. and a good tip.
I think I got that off of homebrewtalk.com. I think I got that tip off of there.
Nice. I would like to thank Chris Jackson for chatting with us and sharing his enthusiasm for growing apples. I really enjoyed the chat. And to find out about the resources that he spoke of, go to episode 15, Chris Jackson, Freedom Farm TV, Georgia, and you'll find all the links and a nice photo of him holding his homemade cider. And as far as the week ahead, I'm not so sure how it's going to go between getting ready to head out to CiderCon and leaving my day job and making sure the wood's stacked and getting everything in check. I hope to have a chat for you next week with John Bunker as we discuss Apple ID and his collecting a library of heritage apples. He's just an amazing encyclopedia, and all the cider makers that he is currently helping and that he's helped in the past. There are so many. And certainly it is my intention to get that chat with Mr. Bunker to you. I am really encouraged every time there is an at Cider Chat follow on Twitter or a tweet, Facebook conversation. That helps a lot. And really now, you know, as we're kind of getting to crunch, donations to Cider Chat also really help, not only to help me, like, you know, get a cider while I'm in Portland, so I'm not just eating pork and beans or something like that and oatmeal every day in my hotel room, but to actually support all the work that goes into this podcast. So thank you for that. And if you want to be following live while I'm in Portland and moving about, you want to download an app called Periscope, which is a live streaming onto your smartphone. And you could actually chime in on the conversation. And I'll do my best on acknowledging you, but sometimes that could be a little bit difficult because you're holding the phone and lots of stuff's going on. And that would go out on Twitter. I'll let folks know that that's happening beforehand, hopefully. And then you have about 24 hours to download whatever video feed there is on Periscope. So that's kind of a cool, like, real-time way to connect. Super psyched to be flying out there. I hope it's going to be clear as I'm going through the Cascades. I could do a little tip of the hat if I'm on the right side of the plane landing in Portland Airport to give a glimpse of Mount Adams. Woohoo! I'm going to try to find that photo of me on the summit. That's when there was a bit more snow up there. And if I find it, I'm going to post it on this episode 15 for you to check out. And I'll tweet it if I find it so you could see that. I think we're down to the end of this show for now. So Rhea Windcaller signing off. And I'm hoping to see all of you soon in Ciderville.